freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com, 710 Sports app. You know the drill. Tom Wassel in for Brock today as he's a late scratch. Good morning, Tommy.
Hey,
good,
man.
Good to have you here. We got a lot to do today. We got some Mariners to discuss. A lot of football. It's game week for the Seahawks. They had a little scrimmage on Saturday. And Thursday night, man, just a couple nights from now, we're going to see the Seahawks in action play a game.
Yeah, it feels like we've already had 2 or 3 weeks of training camp, but we haven't had a game yet. It feels like it got started maybe a little bit earlier this year. July 26th, I think, was the exact day. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to taking on Andrew Luck this week.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of cool to see. He's throwing the Duke again, you know.
He is throwing the Duke.
Which is big. It's big for everybody. All right, let's talk some Mariners. We'll come back. We got a lot of Seahawks stuff planned for the next hour, I promise, including Tedrick Thompson, who's going to join us in about a half hour. He's the star of camp, as far as I can tell.
He's going to pick Andrew Luck off.
Wow.
Bold prediction.
He's going to pick off Andrew Luck.
I was pick. What'd I say?
I don't know. He's gonna
pick Andrew Luck off.
Yeah.
Yeah, pick him off.
All right.
Okay.
I want to go two ways here. I want to give you an incredibly negative take on the Mariners.
Wow.
But I also want to give you an incredibly positive glimmer of hope. Okay?
Continue.
Can I do both?
I hope so.
The thing is, whatever you do last is the only thing people hear. So let me start with the negative, and then I'll give you the positive, and you'll all think that I'm an incredibly positive person. Because every time I try to do this the other way, all I hear is, Salk, you're so negative. So let me start off with the negative, okay? And then I will give you the giant glimmer of hope. Lydia, don't listen to the first part of this, okay? Only listen to the second part.
Perfect.
Kyle's covering her ears.
Cover it. Yeah, box her ears for a
Lydia,
moment.
Earmuffs.
Here's the bad news. You just had the easy part of your schedule. You just had the god-awful Blue Jays, and they managed to take 3 or 4 from you over the weekend. This upcoming road trip and what you have ahead of you is the hardest thing you have had to do since that trip through Boston and New York. Listen to this. So you go to Texas, who's not good, but you got to go to the hot sun in Texas and get beat up in August. After 3 games in Texas, no break, you go to Houston for 4 and play the Astros, who have obviously had your number and just about everybody else's. After you've been in Texas for 7 games against the Rangers and Astros and haven't had an off day since last week, then you get your 3 games with the A's on the road in Oakland. Once you're exhausted, beat up, and sick of being on the road for all of that time, then you get the A's. You do get an off day after your 3-gamer with the A's, and presuming you're still in this thing, you got to come home to face the Dodgers and their $9 gazillion payroll, and then the Astros again for 3 more. Another day off, and then you go to see the first place in the NL West Diamondbacks. And it's not until the Padres at the end of this month that it gets easy. So you're going to get Robinson Cano back, and that's some great news. That'll be next week. And there's a couple of off days sort of later in the month. But short of that, August is about to get nasty for the Seattle Mariners.
Okay, when you say you're going to face,
yeah,
then you go to Texas. I know you don't mean Tom Wassel.
Right.
Do you mean, are you talking to the fans or are you talking to the players?
I'm just saying that's what the Mariners are going to do.
Okay, but I mean, they had a pretty successful first half, right? This team we were talking about, they're brimming with confidence, it's chemistry, it's this, it's that, no panic. I hope that these guys, when they actually look at the schedule themselves, they don't think of it the same way we're looking at it.
I don't think they look
at it. Oh, you know what, man? It's going to be hot in Texas. Or the Astros are really good. Or, you know, the Dodgers are, they've rebounded since the beginning of the year. And, oh, by the way, the Oakland A's, who have just caught us and now passed us, were in trouble. I really hope that they don't look at it that way.
I don't think they do at all.
Okay.
I think that they are looking, they probably don't know that schedule.
Right.
The odds
not that
are
far out.
The players do not. They know that right now they are on their way to Texas. They'll play the Rangers tonight. They probably know where else they're going on the road trip because they have to pack for it. Mm. And other than that, they probably don't even know.
Well,
but we get to know, and we get to look at it, and we know how these things have gone in the past. You've heard all the things. Well, you know, we got beat up in Texas in the hot heat there every day. And you've heard all these
things. Funny.
Before.
It's funny how they always say that after the fact, but nobody ever acknowledges it beforehand.
Well, I'm acknowledging it now.
Good. I'm glad
saying
you
it
are.
Now, Tom. Tom. I'm here for the
peak. These guys are human beings. If it's hot out there, it's going to be harder to play. I don't care if you're a professional or not.
Yeah, I mean, they should. It's not an excuse. You should find a way to get over
but
it.
But beat the Rangers. Just, teams. You know, come on.
But you got to go out there. You got to beat Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and the Rangers. You can't allow that guy to beat you. So, all right, that's the bad news. Let me give you the good news, okay? This is the silver lining.
It took a long time to get to the good news.
Howdy, stop it.
That's that news wasn't even that bad. Continue.
All right, let me get to the good news. Here's the good news. As bad as the Mariners have been for the last 20, 30 games, they haven't really done that much wrong.
Continue.
They just haven't hit. But they haven't done a lot of dumb stuff. They just haven't, like, strung together hits. They've had a couple of miscues on defense along the way, which get sort of, you know, magnified because, you're scoring one or two runs every single game. But all that energy and aggressiveness and all the things that they are good at doing become irrelevant if you don't get on base often enough to show all of those things in the field. So I don't think that they've, like, I don't think they've quit. I don't think that there's an energy issue. I just think they're just not hitting.
I think I like your bad news better than your good news.
Why?
Because teams, that doesn't make me feel any better.
Teams go through slumps, man, and players go through slumps, and a bunch of theirs all kind of went through them at the same time. They're not a lazy, mistake-prone group. They're not one that's unwilling to go out there and go to war together, for lack of a better term. I mean, they've just been mired in a really bad offensive slump, and the best news of all this weekend is that the one guy you've been sort of looking at with your eyes, like, big and saying, okay, if this guy can just hit, the middle of this lineup will come together, is Kyle Seager. And to see him hit a few home runs over the weekend, two yesterday, he seems like he has his stroke back and his eye back. You know, that is enormous news for the Mariners. I know that everything else from this weekend was awful. Mm-hmm. Losing 3 out of 4 to a AAA Blue Jays team is terrible. Like, there's a million things to be super mad about. But if Kyle Seager can hit, Nelson Cruz continues to hit, now all of a sudden you have the middle of your lineup back with Cano here in a week. Yeah, I could start writing a pretty good script on how this team figures it out down the stretch.
Yeah,
another
but
2-2 to Seager. Breaking ball is lopped into right field. Grichik at the wall, and this is gone! Back-to-back home runs. Cruz and then Seager for Kyle, his second in as many at-bats this afternoon. And it feels awfully nice to pour it on a little bit to these Blue Jays. It's now 6-3 Mariners in the last of the seventh.
That one sort of snuck up on Aaron a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah.
A little fly ball that sneaked out of there.
Snuck up on all of us. You know, when I look at this lineup, you talk about slumping. Whenever a team slumps, what's the first thing you wonder? You wonder, is this the real team or is it just a slump? Which is it? Because you never know until it's all done, basically. We don't know if it's going to end. When you look up and down the lineup, I would say this. You can go player by player and identify which one of these guys is slumping, which one may have regressed to the mean. Segura is slumping.
Yes.
Right? He had a bad month.
Yes.
Haniger, I'm not so sure about.
I think he's slumping.
So you think
he's
actually a 293 hitter?
I think
hitter.
He's a streaky player. He goes up, he goes down. That's what we've seen over the last couple of years when he's been healthy. He goes through real hot streaks where nobody can get him out, and then it's just sort of like Nelson Cruz, just not as good.
I don't think he's a 190 hitter. We'll put it that way. But he's better than that, but I'm not sure what his ceiling is either.
All right, if it's not 280 and it's not 190, it might be 250, which means he's got to start hitting 280 again to balance out the time he spent at 190.
Okay, but he's already done that, is my point.
I think,
can he keep doing it?
I think he will hit somewhere in the middle.
We'll see. Ryan Healy, he'd be another one of those guys who I worry might just be where he's going to be. D. Gordon's a little confusing, and I know he's hurt at the moment, but since that hot start he had, he really never got going again. I know did he hit around 300 for July? I think he did, but it was a very quiet 300. And Seager, is he coming around or is he not? There's just a lot of questions there, and we're asking this team to get back on track. They have to get hot again because the A's just won't let up. They have to be hot as
a
group.
If you're going to start talking about, you know, regressing back to the mean, at some point the A's should let up as well. Hopefully it's in like a week when you end up in Oakland ready to play them, and all of a sudden, I mean, you saw what a sweep can do. You know, you saw this weekend Red Sox and Yankees, a 4-game sweep, took that division lead from 5.5 to 9.5.
Yeah.
They essentially ended the American League East this weekend.
That's a slump, though. What the Yankees are going through is a slump. Those guys are better
than
that.
You have the opportunity to do some of that and jump right back into it by taking on Oakland in 10 games down the stretch here. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, the Mariners beat Toronto yesterday, Tom. It was a 6-3 victory, and To say they needed it would be an understatement. They avoid a sweep at the hands of the Blue Jays. They do still lose a 3-1 series. They also snap a five-game losing skid. Here's the good news. Kyle Seager went deep not once but twice. Nelson Cruz drove in four runs. That's how the Mariners scored. If they are going to start winning games here in bunches, they're going to need the middle of their order to do something. Those are the guys that get paid the big bucks. It's Kyle Seager, Nelson Cruz, and when Robinson Cano comes back, throw his name in there as well. You got to get those. You got to get production from those guys, and this is really the first time all year I think there's been some hope that Kyle Seager will come out of the slump.
Yeah, Edwin Diaz is having the best year of any Mariner, but I think we see time and time again, whenever Cruz cranks one, you know he's their most important player, their actual MVP. He's the you take him out of it, then you're really feeling like, man, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to come back or not. I know when Bob Stelton gets here later on, he will talk a lot about how it's a disgrace that you lost to such a bad team. You just talked about a Triple-A team. Maybe I'm just in denial, but the fact that they lost 3 out of 4 to them isn't bothering me much more than if it were the Astros. Because at this point, you just have to win games, right? You're already 2.5 games behind Oakland. It doesn't matter to me where they get their wins, where they lose. The schedule might make it a little bit harder, but it doesn't make me happier if they go out and sweep the Dodgers. It doesn't prove anything at this point. I know that they've got that in them, so see you, Toronto fans.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
A little injury update. D. Gordon missed a couple games over the weekend after tweaking his ankle covering second base on Thursday night. With him out, Mariners used Jean Segura and Denard Span in the leadoff spot, and that's actually something I want to talk about. I would like to see them maybe juggle this lineup a little bit, and I'd start looking at some names like Denard Span at the top every night, move D. Gordon down into the 9 spot, and see if he can work his way back into the top of the lineup. Especially once Robinson Cano comes back, I think you could create something pretty interesting, either going Segura, Haniger, Cano, Cruz, Seager, or perhaps Span, Haniger, or Segura. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could play this to get some of your hot bats at the top of the lineup. When you start looking on base percentage, I think there's some ways they could do this differently. Meanwhile, Felix Hernandez will make his next start tomorrow against the Rangers. This according to the team over the weekend. Once again, though, I think the question marks will be out. Will this be Felix's final start this season for the Mariners?
Yeah, Felix just sort of middled his way through that last start, didn't he? He gave up the 2 runs, really because that ball went right underneath Kyle Seager's glove there. But he still wasn't really himself. You heard Service talk about it after the game. You heard Felix talk about it after the game. So will the standard be lowered for him, or will it be raised? I think it's probably the same. But what kind of start are we... What's the best we can hope for from Felix? If he throws a 7-inning shutout, are we all going to say, all right, you know what, Felix is back, he's ready to go? Or will it just be a mirage? Probably a mirage.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Seahawks held their first scrimmage of the year on Saturday. Russell Wilson in the first-team offense was very sharp. Russell throwing touchdown passes on all 4 drives that he led. Pretty good news. Even better news, preseason games are just a couple days away. On Thursday, the Colts come to Seattle for the very first preseason game, hoping that we get to see at least a little bit of that first-team offense. What will you be watching for? For me, it'll be 2 things. 1, how does the offensive line perform with the running game specifically? And 2, are the Seahawks' defensive ends capable of generating any pressure on the passer? As you look at them now with Deion Jordan hurt and Frank Clark kind of in some weird zone, you just wonder whether or not they're going to be able to any way affect the passer.
I want to look at the offensive line in this game only because most of these guys have been here as a group at least for a year or part of a year. Dwayne Brown got here through midway through last year. Other than that, and I'm not saying this to poo-poo preseason because I actually don't mind watching the first preseason game. It gets me kind of excited like it does the rest of you. But this team may take a little while to get going. If the defense gets lit up, the secondary, something like that, I'm really not going to be too alarmed in the first preseason game. I'm willing to let that slide for a couple weeks.
All right, those are 3 things you need to know. We do that every morning at 7:10. I will say this, though. The one thing that I think you have been able to see in the preseason is the offensive line play. Every year they've looked bad right from the jump street. And at the beginning of the year, you're kind of like, well, they'll figure it out, and it takes a while to come together and this and that. And then,
they say that. We don't.
Well, I think at times I've said that because we saw it. The one year we did see it. the year, what was it, 3 years ago, where Russell went nuts at the end of the year.
Oh, 2015. Yeah,
I mean, you did see it that year. That offensive line was really bad for the first 8 or 9 games, and then it kind of came together at the end. They started running the ball again, and Russell protecting Russell, he threw for all those yards. And it sort of gave you this hope that, all right, maybe there is some truth to that. And then the last 2 years happened when they were just, it seemed like they went from bad to worse over the course of the season. And so I'm hoping that we get to see them look pretty good right away. And if they do, I think I'll buy it.
Yeah, 4 out of 5 of those guys have been here together. I mean, Posick a little more limited there, but look, Effetti's the big question on that line. Britt, Brown, maybe Posick. Fluker's a total wild card.
He might be less of a wild card or a question mark with J.R. Sweezy here. He may not even be playing.
Right, sure.
I mean, like, you may have found a way to just remove him from the whole situation.
Well, yeah, I want to give him a chance, though, I mean, before we've even gotten going here. But Effetti's the big question
Talk
mark
to Tedrick
here.
Thompson, who's a big part of this defense, coming up here in 15 minutes. Right now, the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
All right, no professor this morning, so we say good morning to ESPN's Mike Sando. Good morning, Mike. How are you? Hello, Mike.
John's the professor. Yeah, John's the professor. I'm the student. Happy to be here.
Good to have you, buddy. We appreciate it. Thanks for doing it this morning. As you talk about these Seahawks and a first preseason game coming up on Thursday, you know, I have my things specifically that I'll be looking for. What would you be looking at specifically as a Seahawks fan?
Yeah, you know, hey, does anybody stand out rushing the passer? And what do the running backs look like? I think that, you know, we had that discussion on 710 several times when I was on last year. It, you know, how much of the running game was the line? How much was the backs? It's obviously both, but I'd like to see those backs and see how they look and see if it's looks good.
Pete Carroll said Doug Baldwin's going to be ready for week one. He's having the knee issue. Is this something we're going to worry about him being hobbled by, even if he is ready to go?
Could be. I think it's never a good sign when a player, especially veteran players, missing significant chunks of camp. But I don't have anything specific on his injury specifically. But it did make me think when I went out to practice the other day, you know, there's enough question marks on the team that you don't want to have him be in question because he's just been automatic. And so I would expect he'll be ready. They said he will, and he's a veteran. He knows how to play. But it's an important one to watch because he's just so good. One of the few guys, you know, on a smaller list of guys who you can really count on for this team.
You know, Mike, it's been interesting watching the national media react to the Seahawks this year. We've seen some of these 4-12 predictions, which I don't know. I don't know if I can buy that, not unless there's a major injury to Russell Wilson or something. But I know you've been around to a bunch of the camps. Has there been any conversation among actual NFL people, not just media people, on what this Seahawks team could look like?
Yeah, you know, I think people feel like obviously the, you know, the winning 12 to 14 games window is not there, but you're right. With Russell Wilson there, there's an insurance against being horrible, and I think everybody in the league realizes that it's hard to be a 4-12 type team when you have a Russell Wilson type quarterback. It just very rarely happens. You probably have to be almost historically bad on defense. So I don't think anyone expects that to be the case. I think that people in the league feel like, you know, don't write them off entirely because Russell's there and he'll keep them competitive and Pete Carroll's got a good program. There's still some respect for Seattle that you're not getting when people write that they could be 4-12.
The Rams made a huge jump last year. Jared Goff, the whole team, they've added a whole bunch of parts here. You've been to their camp. What were your takeaways from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of excitement there because of the guys they brought in. You know, my feel is when you bring in a bunch of guys like that, especially Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, they seem to be the types of guys who, you know, if you get it rolling, they're going well. More power to you. If you have some bumps in the road, look out, could be tougher. So that's a gamble, I think, that they are willing to take because they feel like they're in this window where you're right. You know, they made the big jump last year, and Seattle's not the big bully. I mean, it's not that they don't think Seattle's a factor in the division, but there's probably a bigger opportunity than there's been. in the past few years for another team. So I think they're making a little bit of a concerted effort to see if they can get over the top this year.
I know you also been to Arizona and been to their camp. I mean, that's another team in flux, obviously. New coach, quarterbacks changing over. What are the Cardinals a threat, yeah, or are they? Is this full-fledged rebuild? I can't quite figure them out.
Yeah, I don't think it's full-fledged rebuild. I think they're another team that, you know, people will take lightly and underestimate. I like Steve Wilks. I think he's really impressive. He's very purposeful, has a clear vision for how he wants to win the games. It's different than Bruce Arians going with a, you know, empty backfield from his own 5-yard line and just throwing it 20 yards down the field all the time. I think they're going to be a more conservative team. When you look at them, you know, they have some serious depth issues, but they have an elite corner in Patrick Peterson, an elite pass rusher in Chandler Jones, an elite running back in David Johnson, you know, a still good Larry Fitzgerald, and two, you know, at least accurate quarterbacks who, you know, could both be busts, could both get hurt, but at least there's some hope there. I think they've done a decent job recovering from having your, you know, your head coach retire, who's the all-time leader in franchise history and wins, and your quarterback retire. They'll be better, I think, than you know, the 4-12, 5-11 type team. I think their over-under is 5.5 wins. I might take the over on that.
Yeah, 5.5 seems a little low for that. What are the Seahawks at, 7.5?
It's a great question off the top of my head. I don't remember. I just remember Arizona because I was just down there. But if Seattle's 7.5, I'm probably taking the over on that too.
Yeah, they're such an interesting team. And I know you mentioned this earlier in the running game and all that stuff, but I just keep looking at these Seahawks and saying, who's going to get to the passer? In an NFL yep. today where that seems to be everything, how do you get to the passer with guys that have never done it really in their career before,
yep.
or in Deion Jordan's case, somebody just can't seem to stay on the field? Is there any hope lurking out there in terms of guys who could get cut or traded or something along the way who could just get to the passer?
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think we're going back to the time. Remember when Russell was first starting out? He's obviously better now, but remember when they lost the game to Atlanta? They had a tough loss to Detroit, you know, going back to maybe 2012-ish, before they really solidified the pass rush. I feel like they're going to be that type of team that is going to be right there at the wire, and if too many of those go the other way, you know, you could be on the outside looking in, but if you get a few of them into your column because you have the quarterback to do it, you may be able to still win 9 or 10 games. I don't see someone who's going to just fall into your lap. I think they'll try. They'll look. But I think that's going to be what we're talking about late in the year, more than we have in the past. And guess what? You got a paid quarterback now. And that's why you can't just go out and sign the Cliff Averills and Michael Bennett's of the world from other teams.
Yeah. Mike Sando, kind enough to join us, and as reward/punishment, we'll give him a wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Mike Sando, if you were to put John Clayton into any role of any movie, what character do you think he would play the best?
Wow. John Clayton in a movie.
Now, first of all, what kind of genre do you want him in?
You know what I want him to be? You know, I don't know why I thought of this. I thought of the... I would like to see him as the trainer in Rocky.
Remember yes! Yes!
You know, and I want to see him, you know, because John takes great pride in being from Braddock, PA. Tough place, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the grit. John's all grit.
You think
I want to see him in that type of role in the corner.
You think a Philly guy like Rocky's going to be able to handle a Pittsburgh guy coming over to train him? Another conflict in the movie.
We're just going to say he's from Pennsylvania, the state. We're not going to tell the writer exactly. We don't want that to come to fore. We'd hate to see John rough him up. I mean, you know, but I think that's the role I want to see. You know?
I like it.
He's got the little cut thing. He can, you know, the M swell. He's pressing it on the, you know, the swollen eye. Oh, that's what I want to see.
Good stuff. Great answer. Mike, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, man. There you go. There's Mike Sando, ESPN.com, ESPN. You can always read and see Mike there. He does a great job. And good job filling in. I could see that. John Clayton filling in on for Rocky.
For Burgess Meredith?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, with the hearing aid in there.
Perfect.
Down, stay down.
Sounds like.
Of course, you got to stay down.
You can listen to the show here on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Wassel is in for Brock today. Tedrick Thompson is going to join us coming up here in just a minute. He's been the talk of camp. He'll be the talk of our show next. I'm Brock and Saul.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Good morning. Hope you guys are having a good day. It is beautiful out. It's supposed to be all week once again. Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Brock is out today and Tom Wassel filling in. We're down at Seahawks training camp as it is now a game week, which means on Thursday we're going to get to see this guy out there running around on the field. Tedrick Thompson, Seahawks safety, taking a few minutes with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How you doing?
How's camp? You've been the talk of training camp. Everybody we've had in here keeps mentioning your name. I mean, T2, we had to figure out what that meant. That took us a second. How long have you been T2?
I've been T2 since last year. It was in the meetings, and Deshaun Shedd had just randomly said it. I don't even remember what happened. Something happened on film, and Deshaun was like T2, and ever since then, it just stuck with me.
All right, so you're T2. We talked to KJ. We talked to Bobby. Everybody keeps saying, you guys got to see T2. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who has impressed everyone. What did you do this offseason to be able to come back and have them say those things about you?
I think I just came in a lot more comfortable, a lot more relaxed. I stayed in the playbook. That was the biggest thing. I stayed in the playbook, and I knew, even getting a new DC, that the playbook wasn't going to change that much from what the vets was telling me. So I was just staying on the playbook and remembering stuff that E.T. and Cam and Sherm said they worked on the offseason, tried to do the same stuff and just try the same shape and everything.
Brock once brought me in his old Indianapolis Colts playbook. He was a quarterback. Mm-hmm. You probably have never heard of him. He's this old guy. He's an old quarterback. And he brought me in his playbook, and it was, you know, it's 2 inches thick. And Tom, you looked at it, right? It was like the most complicated thing I'd ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Is a defensive playbook as thick and complicated and confusing, or is it a little simpler?
At first, it was last year, just because I was trying to learn everything at once. I was trying to get caught up to speed quick. You know, when you got those guys in your room, you try to get on the same speed as they were. So I think I just made it more complicated than it really was. I just had to slow it down, and I finally got it, so I feel good about it.
What's the biggest difference for you between college and pro? Is it just the speed of the game? Is it the playbook? Is it something else?
I think the first thing that came to mind, how long the season is. Like, in college, it wasn't that long, the 4 years I was there. And last year, my rookie year probably was the longest football season I ever had, going from after ending my senior year to start training for the combine, then doing the combine, then after the draft and going through preseason, or going through training camp and going through preseason, then going through the full season. So I think just how long it is.
You hit that rookie wall they talk about.
I remember waking up one day like, man, that's a long season. So I, if you want to call out the rookie wall, I'll show hit that.
Talking to Tedrick Thompson here on 710 ESPN Seattle. What motivates you?
My mom, my sister, I just say family in general, coming from the background we came from. My mom raising us by herself, basically. Three kids, putting us through college. So I think my mom's my biggest inspiration.
Where is she now? Is she around?
Yeah, she's in Inglewood, California. She's still out there, still in California. She's still doing good.
If you, let's say everything works out great in the preseason, you have an awesome preseason, you're named the starter for game one of the regular season, starting a free safety, will she come up? Will you bring her up here for that?
Yeah, she come up here regardless. She was out here. Good. Even last year, she came to all my preseason games last year. Mind you, California really, like, right there. It's not that far. Yeah. Even when I was at Colorado in college, she tried to come to as many games as she could, so... My mom and my sister are my biggest supporters, so every time they get a chance, whenever they're off work, they can come up here to training camp. They always going to try to come.
That's pretty awesome.
Are you at a point in your life where football is fun for you or still fun for you to try to make it fun, or is it all business?
No, it's still fun. Like, I still play it for the same reason. I try to put – once I step on the field, it's always still fun from when I was a little kid playing at Jesse Owens Park in L.A., so football is still always fun for me.
All right, here's your choice. It's the end of a game. You got two choices of how you can win this game. You can knock somebody out at the goal line and force a fumble, or you can come up with a big pick in the end zone to win the game, run it back for a touchdown.
To be honest with you, it don't even matter. Turnover is a turnover. I don't even care.
But which is more fun?
Which is more fun?
Is more fun to get your hands on the ball or to knock someone out?
Me personally, to get a hand on the ball, for sure, yeah, sure.
So you did a lot of that at Colorado, right?
Yeah. Colorado was fun. I think the way we played our defense, especially our senior year, we had two great corners, Cheeto and Akello, who – playing lead right now, so college was fun for us.
So it's Thursday night. You pick off Andrew Luck, which I've already predicted, by the way. You run off the field onto the sidelines. Who's the first guy that comes up to you to congratulate you?
I don't even know. Whoever closest to me, I guess. That's just how I don't really know how to explain that. When big plays and stuff like that happen, when you get up, you kind of don't even see nobody. You just know the team excited for you, know everybody excited, so whoever around.
Who are your friends on this team? Who have you gotten to know, and who do you hang out with?
Everybody, really. I just stick it to my class. I think me, Shaq, Leno, and Mike, we all just super close just because we all came in together. You know, we'd be with each other outside the facilities and stuff like that. I'm always at Mike's house and stuff like that. So I feel like us four got a real good connection.
Has Shaq changed at all now that his brother's here? Is he, nah, does he, Shaq, he's Shaq. Not too cool to hang out with you guys now,
nah,
right?
Nah, Shaq's still Shaq. He's
okay.
Still Shaq, yeah.
And you call him Shaq, and what do we call Shaquem?
We call him Keem.
Keem.
Is so it Keem and Keel?
Yeah, Keem and Keel. That's what they call it. I still call Shaq. That's what I was calling when we first got here.
I feel like he's made this more confusing than it needs to be. Like, Shaq. When he first got here, he said his name was Keel, and we said, okay, fine, that's cool. And then he said, no, I want to be known as Shaq.
Yeah.
And then his brother showed up. He feels like he's made this much more confusing.
No, I think this is because back home where he's from, everybody called him Keel. And when he got here, everybody was calling him Shaq. So it's kind of the same thing. When I go home, don't nobody call me T2. Like, they call me my first name, Tedrick. Like, that's what my mama called me. Then when I go on... See, my homeboys, they don't call me Tedrick or T2. They call me Ted. So I just depends on where you're at.
It'd be weird to have two Shaqs on the team and not actually call anybody Shaq. I mean, the purpose of that name is to honor the great Shaquille O'Neal.
Obviously.
Yeah, we call them, they good, though. Keem doing good, and Shaq's still doing good, so it's good to have
them. I'm actually legally obligated to ask you about Earl Thomas. I feel bad about it, but it's a part of my contract status. I have to ask you about it because you're in this spot where you're playing a free safety spot that Earl has navigated since 2012. He's been one of the best to ever do it, and he's sort of out there in this weird spot where you don't know whether he's going to be coming back to play for the team or not. How does that feel?
To be honest with you, I don't even think about it until somebody kind of asked me about it. I just know me personally, I'm just always praying for the bro. Like, I'm always praying for him. I hope, you know what I'm saying, get everything he deserves. And you know, I got nothing but love for ET, so I'm always praying for him and just hope the best for him.
Last week when I talked to you, you mentioned how Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and those guys mentored you while they were here. Can you talk a little bit about how that relationship formed and what that was like? Did they pull you aside? Did you seek them out? How did that work?
I think they mentored all of us. I didn't just mean just me in particular, but I feel like they all kind of took somebody underneath their wing. I know Sherm and Shaq sat next to each other in the defensive meeting room, and Sherm was always feeding him game and you know, giving him pointers and stuff like that. Same thing with Leno and Cam. Cam was always talking to Leno. Jay Lane was always talking to Mike. I was always talking to E.T. So it wasn't just me. Like, all the older guys, like even D-Shed was talking to all of us because, you know, D-Shed plays special teams, corner, safety, nickel. So they was able to just feed us the game, and we were able just to build off those guys.
Have you seen Terminator 2?
Probably not in a minute. Not in a long, long time.
But have you seen, I mean,
what, I know I've seen it before.
What year were you born? You were probably born around the same time it came out. In 95.
So it was like 4 years old.
So that movie is already 4 years before. Yeah, it was like 1991 that movie came out.
Yeah,
so
do
you have to see it to at least, like, you
know, I got
to
see it to remember. Like, I know when I put it on, I remember this part. I ain't seen it in a long time.
That's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
The T-1000.
I know the gist of it.
All right. What are your favorite movies?
My favorite movies? I got a lot. I say The Wood, Omar Epps, Life of Martin Lawrence, All of Fridays. I got a lot of good movies.
Okay.
How many Fridays are there? Are there three?
It's three, yeah. I heard he coming out with another one, but I don't know if that's true or not.
With Ice Cube, is Ice Cube going to be in it, you think?
I hope so. I hope everybody in it.
You have to have at least somebody from the original to carry it, no matter how far you go, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Either that or you got to say you're just rebooting the whole series, and you then have to do a remake. If you're
with somebody
bring a whole
else.
New cast, right?
Exactly.
Like, you're just redoing the movie as
I don't know if that's a fact. That's just what I heard, though.
Hey, so that's fine. We don't
heard it here,
T2. We don't need facts on this show. We just sort of start rumors. We'll start this one. You're going to start every game for the Seahawks this year at free safety. Have a great year. We'd really enjoy that. How's
appreciate
that rumor
it,
sound?
Appreciate that.
All right, Tedrick, thank you so much. T2, we appreciate you coming by, and we'll talk to you soon. There you go. There's Tedrick Thompson sitting down with us here on Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. And I hope that last one is true. I've been rooting for him a little bit. I'll admit, I thought it was going to be Delano Hill. Of the two safeties, I thought it was going to be Delano.
Leno, come on. I'm learning all these new nicknames.
I don't feel comfortable throwing around all the nicknames, Lydia. Come on.
I was like, I wanted you to ask him, do you call anyone by their first name?
Yeah,
I love it.
I don't throw around nicknames until I actually am, like, comfortable enough with the person to do so.
I think you call Frank Clark by his proper name. You call him Frank.
As opposed to what?
Well, whatever his nickname. I don't think he has a nickname.
So I just got to call him Frank.
Well, forget about what you call him, what the team guys call him, right?
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable entering. I'm not part of their team.
No. You don't do that.
But I thought Delano Hill was going to be the guy who seized that job at strong safety and came out just hitting people. He was a third-round pick last year, and I kind of was expecting him to be the guy to take the lead. By all accounts so far, Tedrick Thompson's been the one to do it instead. And if McDougal's better at strong safety and he's a good cover guy at that spot, and then you can have Tedrick Thompson picking off balls. Like, I'm kind of excited to see what that looks like.
You know, it's interesting. I don't want to call this a problem. I'll just call it an issue because it could go either way. But they had the same issue in the secondary that they do on the defensive line. Which guys are going to rise up and be the type of guys you need to account for if you're on offense. It seems like they have a lot of good pieces,
yeah.
But who's going to really rise up? You know, Sando was talking about where's the pass rush going to come from? We're talking about back in 2012 what they had. It was kind of Chris Clemens racking up the sack numbers and nobody else, but it still worked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could be in a similar situation right now. Hopefully it'll be more guys than just one, though.
He's 4 years younger than T2. Did that blow your mind a little bit when he said that?
No, because over the last couple of years, when you start getting guys born in the 90s, like when you're in junior high.
He was born in the mid-90s.
Mid-90s.
He was born, what year did Terminator 2 come? I think it's 1990. 90,
I think it was 91.
It was 91.
91. 4 years later.
And that movie still, in a way, kind of holds up as...
I would say that movie holds up, but Kyle's usually the judge of these things. Does T2 hold up, Kyle?
No.
No?
T2's out.
It doesn't hold up to what? Other, like, action movies?
I don't know. I'm just asking if it holds up. He can decide.
To Arnold Schwarzenegger's plethora of action flicks?
You could make an argument it was the last really good movie he did.
Absolutely. I wouldn't just make that argument. I would say that's true. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk to Brock. He doesn't know about any of this stuff, but
no.
He'll join us to talk some football, which he does know a lot about. Coors Light's Blue 42 along the way here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42, some football conversation. Wassel's in for Brock today, but we got Brock on the phone to do a little football. Hi, buddy. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, man. Good morning, man.
Got to be a beautiful day for you. You shot 78 yesterday.
Wow.
For the first time in your life.
You know what? I was telling Macy, I played with Macy yesterday, and it was awesome. And maybe she's just got to play with me every time because her words of affirmation were flowing. I was kind of telling her, I'm never like this. It never is like this for Dad. But it was just one of those magical, beautiful days. And first time in my life. First time in my life, I think probably 500 rounds. I don't know, something like that, that I ever broke 80. So that's pretty fun.
Hey, Brock, would you let Macy play golf if I was golfing with you guys? Like, would there be any concerns about foul language there?
I don't think so, Tom. Did you see the video that Salk retweeted yesterday, though?
Yes.
About the golfers?
Yes, I did.
Yes. No, I don't think so. Now, she would count every one of them. And she wouldn't say it to you, but like at the end of the round, she'd say, Dad, did you know that Tom Wassel said 52 F-words?
I played golf with Tom yesterday, and it was significantly more than 52. Also, I think we both shot 78 on the back.
That's
so
right.
There you go.
On 18.
Right. Question number one for you. Let's get to these football questions, for God's sakes. Brock, talking about the Seahawks scrimmage on Saturday, what was the most encouraging sign?
I think the most encouraging sign was the running backs, Mike, out of the backfield, and just some of the damage they did. You know, a long touchdown pass on just a simple check down to Chris Carson and having that opportunity. You know, we watched the guy last year, Alvin Kamara, win Rookie of the Year in New Orleans. And a lot of it was the damage he did, catching the ball out of the backfield. Sean Payton, pretty creative in different matchups and using him. In between Chris Carson and Rashad Penny and C.J. Prosise, that should be an enormous, and I mean an enormous, step up. And it was just a few years ago, the leading touchdown receiver on the Seahawks was Marshawn Lynch. So it's not as if, you know, Russell doesn't know the value of that and as if Pete Carroll doesn't know that running backs in this league can be incredibly important, even catching touchdowns. But, yeah, I think that was one of the highlights for me is just watching Russell. You know, you want to slow down a rush. You want to make it a little bit easier on everybody else. And we talked about this last year, the number they had in mind, you know, to really get the ball to their running backs. They came nowhere close to that. Now you've got three different options out of the backfield, all very adept at catching the ball, and they showcased some of that over the weekend.
Question number two. Brock, what's the most discouraging thing you've seen in camp so far?
Well, I think just in particular over the weekend, Tom, as they cranked up their scrimmage and got things going and tried to simulate as much as they can what's happening here Thursday night with Indy, and that's Jermaine Ifedi jumping off sides a couple more times. You know, he led all the NFL for offensive linemen with 18 accepted penalties against him, and yet again a couple more times in that scrimmage, that heart rate either races too fast, he doesn't trust himself, or he just kind of loses his mind before the snap, and that's just not going to be tenable. And I think, unlike last year where there were no other options, there's nobody you were going to go to, I don't think that's the case this year. You know, I think Isaiah Battle has made some strides in that competition. I know they're playing George Fant at left tackle, you know, and really trying to groom him, but I think there's more options, more opportunity. If that guy cannot stay on count and hold his water, he's going to lose his job. I just don't think that Mike Solari, Pete Carroll are going to be as gracious. I don't think they need to be, as the competition should crank up at that position as well.
Also, year three for him. Question number three. If he would be a starter on the offensive side of the ball who would be at least at risk of losing his job, who would be in the same position on the defensive side?
Yeah, outside of the safeties, Mike, and corners, Byron Maxwell, and I think that's still going to be some competition with Trey. As far as established guys that have started in this league and played a bunch, I think Barkevious Mingo is going to have a huge watch for me come Thursday as we're watching that game and throughout the preseason. You know, he was brought in to be the strong side linebacker, and there's not great depth in that linebacker room. You know, Shaquem gives a little bit, I think, to KJ behind him. But outside of that, it's not like it's just seething with veterans and guys that have played a lot of football, and Michael Wilhoit last year, and Garvin, and et cetera, et cetera. But for Kevis Mingo, every time I've looked at him, he just strikes me as being very slight. You know, Bruce Irvin played that Sam position at a really high level. And when you play that position, you better, and you have to leverage the point of attack. You've got to be really strong. And that'll be something, it's hard to judge in preseason, especially in 2 weeks of camp, where there's not a lot of hitting and running downhill. But I got a big old watch on him to see how he holds up at that point of attack in this system, because it requires some real strength. And just that eye test, he strikes me as a much more linear movement guy than one that can hold the point. I'll be watching him closely.
There you go. That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. I'm amazed, man. 78. That's a heck of a day for you, Brock. We're very impressed. We just talked to Tedrick Thompson. He said that he had never seen really T2, and that movie was 4 years old when he was born.
Wow. Interesting. Did he look at Tom Wassel and say, "Do you just work here all day?" Because didn't I talk to you last week with that other like rock star guy?
When he first came walking out here, actually, he smiled at me, indicating that, "Hey, I remember you," which was kind of nice.
I don't know. I didn't get that sense.
No, you were looking the other way.
I got the sense he had no idea who I was.
He remembered me. We talked about his hometown of Inglewood. I was just there over the weekend.
There you go. Bye, Brock.
Love you guys.
See you, buddy. Have a good rest of the day, and Brock will be back in tomorrow morning, of course, at 7 o'clock. Just a few days away, man, from actually seeing this team out there on the field. All right, speaking of these Seahawks, as you get ready for this year, there's some interesting questions, and then there are some things that I think you know. I want to pull a few of those things together, and I got a question for the audience. We'll do it together next here on Brock and Salk.